Sixth case, Davis versus Time Warner. Mr. Coe.
If it pleases the court, I'm here on behalf of Mr. Robert Henry Davis, the appellant, plaintiff. We appear here today because he has alleged violations of 42 U.S.C. section 1981 A and B and the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Title 7, 42 U.S.C. section 2000E. This is an appeal from a summary judgment dismissal where the evidence was not viewed in a light most favorable to the plaintiff. The standard of review is de novo. Specifically, Mr. Davis alleges that he was discriminated and retaliated against by defendant Time Warner Cable, and that he was subjected to a discharge as part of a pattern of conduct to intimidate and denigrate the African-American salespersons, number one, and to show support for the same Caucasian management and employees that had spread inflammatory rumors that a white female, Mrs. Mary Schmidt, was unsuccessful because the three African-Americans were getting away with murder to her, and the African-Americans were successful only because they were receiving preferential treatment and favoritism. And three, Mr. Davis engaged in the protected activity of opposing the discriminatory practices of Director Ronald Klobowski that favored the white employees, and he subsequently was terminated and retaliated for that. Mr. Davis further alleges that Director Klobowski was exposed by the internal HR of TWC, Manager Dion Archie, as having lied regarding the reason Mr. Davis was discharged, and that Director Klobowski wrote up a notice of termination with false information on it, and he was under pressure from the Caucasian management and employees because of the rumors. She subsequently determined, this is their internal HR, that the discharge of Mr. Davis appeared to be with malice and intent, and in fact that Mr. Davis had never committed any fraud, which is what he was fired for. We'll get to that in a second. The district court relied primarily on, and TWC, of course, piggybacks on it, that there was good faith in the termination of Mr. Davis, but there could never have been any, I would say, good faith, because, first of all, Mr. Davis was subsequently reinstated because they found out he was totally innocent. However, upon being reinstated, he was subjected to a 90 days performance improvement plan. His discharge was not expunged from his record. It was merely reduced to a paid suspension. In other words, they're keeping dirt on his record. Then he was reinstated as number three in a sales contest. When he went out, he was number one. In fact, when he was discharged, he was the best salesperson that Time Warner Cable had. And that was one of the complaints of the white employee, of the white salesperson. See, there was a white, I don't want to say a white team, but there was an outside team and an inside team. The outside team consisted, I'd say, almost about 10 employees, but they were all white. Now, the inside team consisted of four employees, one of which was white, the least senior, which was Mary Schmidt, and the three African Americans, two males and one female. So this defies good faith. And in fact, I have stated, I stated in my reply brief, that this hostile atmosphere that Mr. Davis, despite his total innocence, was reinstated to was itself a smoking gun of unlawful motive that compelled his precipitate termination. And in fact, when Mr. Davis, as we'll get to in a second, was terminated, when he was terminated, he was not allowed to defend his innocence. He was simply walked out of the, handed the notice of termination and walked out of the facility in front of everyone.
He counted as a mission, I don't know what you call it, sale, I guess, as
yes.
one that shouldn't have been. And
correct.
Everybody around him seemed to tell him that. And after it was reviewed by black and white people, that what he did was terminal.
Well, I'm glad you said that because
the priests say. Now, you may have something else to say, but it just seems that all of this that occurred had no racial overtone other than the fact that he's black.
Well, I'm glad
But so were a lot of the people who went in on that decision.
Well, what I'm trying to say, Your Honor, and get to is there's no such evidence. There's none whatsoever, and I challenge anyone to look into the record and find it.
Well, I don't remember anybody's name. I don't remember anybody's color.
Well, I know that. I can run them off right away. There was a Dion Archie. She did the subsequent investigation.
What's her race?
She's black, but she never found. In fact, she found that Mr. Davis had not engaged in any fraudulent conduct.
That was ultimately when they found out there was some discrepancy coming from the customer.
Well, what I'm trying to say, Your Honor,
another, and that's why it was brought back in because there was some ambiguity there.
No, what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
What I'm trying to say, Your Honor, and I have laid it out in the brief and in my reply. There was no ever any discrepancy. In fact, Mr. Davis followed. There was a white employee named Drew Kopinski who brought the transaction to Mr. Davis as a commissionable sale, and Mr. Davis expressed his own professional opinion and agreeing with Mr. Kopchinski. Miss Cheryl Parker, the person who Mr. Kopchinski worked for, informed Mr. Klubowski that this was a two-outlet transaction. And according to the policies of Mr. Klubowski, Director Klubowski, Mr. Kopchinski and Mr. Davis were correctly handling the transaction. He knew this even before he fired him. And even when he went to Mr. Vice President Dan Conrad, which the district court relies on, and went to his manager, Jim Frazier, they knew this. We must assume on a motion for summary judgment that he told them the truth because it is right in the, and I noted this in my reply brief, it is right in the investigation of Dion Archie that Ms. Parker told Mr. Director Klubowski that it was a two-outlet transaction which requires another contract. So there could never have been any fraud. And one of the things that has disturbed the plaintiff throughout this process, if you're at the job, just like the judges are writing their own decisions, if you're at the job expressing your own opinion, how is that fraud? Mr. Kopchinski was not disciplined. He was not even investigated, even though he was into the situation every bit as much as Mr. Davis. And I see my light is coming on. But one of the things I note and that the defendant has not addressed is the fact that you have a case, CBOCS, and you have the Lange versus Illinois case. Both of those cases, the facts are exactly the same. At least we deserve to go to trial so that we can hear this information. And remember, Mr. Klubowski knew that at the time, and it is in print. And if you look at my reply brief, you will see the direct quotation of Dion Archie, that Mr. Davis at that particular time was merely following his policies. Nothing happened to Drew Kopinski, who was white. That by itself, to me, is discriminatory.
Thank you. Mr. Knowles?
May May it please the court. I'm here on behalf of Time Warner Cable to try to cut through some of the allegations and the smoke screens that you've just heard and explain to start with why Mr. Davis was dismissed. In a word, he was dismissed because management had a reasonable good faith belief that he had committed a form of sales fraud by trying to turn a non-commissionable transaction into a commissionable one. And it started with a call from a customer. And these facts are clear from the record. The customer calls Victoria Rogers, says, I want to move an outlet. She sends the case to Drew Kopczynski, a clerk not trained in relocations, and tells him to handle it, and he doesn't. And it goes back into the phone queue, is picked up by Mr. Davis, and Davis convinces the customer that, yes, this is a sale. We need a sale contract. And Victoria Rogers overhears this and says, no, it's not a sale. This is not a proper case for a contract. She reports it to the lead person, Ron Coleman. Coleman questions the transaction. In the meantime, the customer has called back and said, why do we need a new sales contract? But Mr. Davis convinces the customer that, yes, a new sales contract is needed. The transaction proceeds. Again, Victoria Rogers also questions the transaction. It proceeds. The person who blew the whistle on the transaction was Cheryl Parker, also African-American, as is Rogers, as is Coleman. She reports it to Jim Frazier, the sales manager, and says, this doesn't look like it's a proper sale. It's a move. It's a move of jacks. And so she reports it to Jim Frazier. He reports it to Ron Klebosky, who is the director of business class services. Klebosky then conducts his own investigation. He calls the customer. He calls the owner of the customer and has read the Riot Act. The owner is upset. The owner accuses Time Warner Cable of being inept at how they deal with customers. The owner repeatedly asks, why do we need a new contract? Accuses Time Warner Cable of being underhanded. So Klebosky rescinds the contract but gives them the benefit of the same rate. As part of his investigation, Klebosky learns that both Coleman and Rogers had questioned the transaction. He reviews the situation with lead and managerial personnel, including Dan Conrad, his vice president. He reviews the situation with human resources, Dion Archie. Everybody agrees that this was an improper transaction. Time Warner Cable has zero tolerance for sales fraud. The remedy is dismissal. In the preceding 26 months, 15 sales employees have been dismissed. Seven of them have been Caucasian. So he is dismissed. This was not a botched termination, as counsel said in the brief. Time Warner Cable, based on the information that it had on the at the time, thought that this was an improper transaction. Now, he was reinstated, so let's review the circumstances of that briefly. He called HR. Dion Archie happened to get the call. She conducted what was essentially a preliminary investigation. A lot of her report was simply channeling what Mr. Davis had told her. The final investigation was conducted by John Woodrum, who had just been appointed as Director of Human Resources. Woodrum's conclusion was that the termination should be upheld, subject to a final check with the customer. The customer basically changed the story about the information that had been given. The key point is not really whether it's two outlets, and this is explained in excruciating detail in the depositions and in the emails from Woodrum. The key point is, was there a separate address? And Klebosky thought it was all an internal, same suite move, one address, and at the end of the day, the customer said, no, there was a tenant with a separate address. So, to make a long story short, the decision was to give him the benefit of the doubt, to bring him back to work, to reinstate him, to pay him not only for back pay, but also for an allocation of commissions in an amount in excess of around $21,000, and he returned to work. Yes, he lost the sales contest of, that Victoria Rogers won by a narrow margin. Okay, now, he's still sued. So let's look first at his retaliation claim. For him to establish a retaliation claim, he has to show that the company engaged in some sort of activity or some sort of an employment practice that Title VII or Section 1981 made illegal. Well, what was this employment practice? Well, it stemmed from the meeting that Klebosky called with all four inside sales representatives because he had heard reports of mistreatment. He wanted them to get along. He called them all together and said, you know, work together, work this out, engage in teamwork, and then he leaves. And they look at each other for a few minutes, and then Ms. Schmidt, the white employee, leaves as well. And the three African-American employees then track down Klebosky and Frazier and say, this is unfair. And maybe they said, this is discriminatory. And Klebosky's response is, be nice to her. Be patient with her. Be more understanding with her. He knew that it's in the brief in great detail. There had been internal conflicts with the team. He wanted them to get along. I submit to you that this is not a practice that is forbidden by Title VII. He wanted teamwork. He wanted them to work together in harmony. And it's not these meetings that took place cannot support a claim of retaliation. And in any event, there's no causal connection between these meetings and the subsequent termination, or between Mr. Davis's race and the subsequent termination. As you've pointed out, most of the people involved were themselves African American, including Ron Coleman and Victoria Rogers, who had essentially made the same complaints of discrimination and unfairness. Nothing happened to them. Klebosky investigated the matter, spoke to the owner of the company, tried to do the right thing, as Judge Edelman noted in his decision, and this was not retaliation. This was not discrimination. Now, part of his retaliation claim is based on events that occurred once he returned to work. The compensation plan changed in 2007. Well, the compensation plan changed every year. And there was a different plan for the inside sales reps and the outside sales reps. The inside sales reps spend 98% of their time answering phone calls. The outside salespeople go out and do cold calling and deal with bigger customers and have different kinds of systems. And under the 2000 plan that they got, they ended up doing better. The inside sales folks ended up doing worse. The two
is this
groups.
A change, I don't know how big this is. Is there a nationwide thing, or is it just confined to this?
This is southeastern Wisconsin, but as time has passed, they've become more regionalized. So I don't know exactly at what point that kicked in, but that's the trend.
The change was just here. It wasn't somewhere else.
Yes.
I'm just looking for consistency.
Yes.
As I understand it, these people in this team were very good at each making over $100,000 a year.
They were. That was a very good job to have.
Apparently outside people thought they were working harder and getting paid less.
There were reports of that. But the important point is that everybody on the inside team was treated the same. Everybody on the outside was treated the same. They're not properly comparable groups of employees. And there wasn't any racial barrier between moving from one group to the other. And in fact, after the 2007 plan came out, Virginia Rogers moved to the outside team, as did Mary Schmidt. So they're not comparable. Just as Drew Kupchinski is a clerk and not comparable to Robert Henry Davis. The other things he complains about: he was briefly on a performance improvement plan. The company rescinded the plan, and in any event, a performance improvement plan is not a material adverse employment action. He complains about the new OBM job that was created for people to focus on renewal of contracts. He complains that he didn't get a sales manager job that he never applied for. The sales manager job posting had closed the day before his termination. So there, you know, there is no discrimination here. There's no retaliation here. Judge Edelman looked at it all, found that there was no evidence, dismissed the claims, and I would ask that you affirm that dismissal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cohen.
There is evidence in the record, and it's just a matter of whether or not it's going to be considered. There's an affidavit from Cheryl Parker who establishes that from even before Mr. Davis was terminated, Mr. Klebowski came to her and said, hey, I got him now. It's not the first time he's done it before, and I've got documentation. All of that was a lie. How can that be good faith? The termination notice of Mr. Davis contains fraud, insubordination, and prior discipline. All of that is a lie. That was established by Ms. Dionne Archie of the HR, and she even recommended that Mr. Klebowski be disciplined for his racial conduct. 3 day, what Mr. My attorney friend stated was that, did not mention, was that 3 days prior to Mr. Davis being terminated, there was a meeting of only the African Americans. And the African Americans were specifically told, you three African Americans, if things don't change, there will be corrective action. That is in the record. And then finally, there's the statement by Ms. Mary Schmidt, who was spreading all the rumors, said that working with the African Americans made her feel like a lamb in the middle of a wolf pack. And that's where the murder statement came from. And that is what Mr. Klebowski said prior to, and Mr. Davis, 3 days prior to him being terminated, told Mr. Klebowski, you're the reason we're being harassed. You're actually letting the white people have favoritism. And so based on that, 3 days later, Mr. Davis is set up. And that evidence is right there before you with the affidavit of Ms. Cheryl Parker. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Mr. Knowles. The case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.